Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now. The B-17 bomber has been called the plane that won the Second World War.
The Flying Fortresses, the pioneer four-motored bomber, in the air since 1935. Steamroller construction, weight about 25 tons, speed better than 300 miles an hour.
Thousands upon thousands of these planes filled the skies over Europe. Thousands of young men risked their lives in them, dropping the bombs that helped free countries occupied by Nazi Germany. Ashley Ahern's grandfather, Joseph Ahern Sr., was one of those men. Her family is from the Boston area, but she's now a reporter for Here Now contributor KUOW in Seattle, which, it turns out, is where her grandfather's B-17 was built. Ashley wanted to find out more about that plane, so she started by asking her dad.
I'm following my dad, Joe Ahern Jr., into the attic to find my grandfather's box of war medals and photos.
Wooden box?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't remember much about my grandfather. He died when I was 9. I know he had wispy white hair and light blue eyes. He liked sipping scotch and watching us grandkids run around the house. He didn't say much. My dad said he didn't talk about the war. But the B-17 he flew meant the world to him.
Ready Teddy.
Ready Teddy was the name of the plane?
Yep.
My dad pulls out a yellowed photograph. My grandfather and 9 other men in his crew are standing shoulders squared in front of their B-17, which was named Ready Teddy. They all had these grins on their faces, like someone just told a joke.
You know, they say smile. Mm. This is how you want to be remembered. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Everybody has a smile on their face, just real cocky. They have their hats tilted a little, you know, just that little kind of cocky yank, you know, grin to their face.
Cocky, but probably terrified. This was early in the war, when the German military was at its strongest, aggressively targeting American and British planes. Almost 5,000 B-17s were lost in combat. 5,000 planes, with 10 crewmen each.
The fortresses seemed to flatten down, gathering way and lift, out toward the continent, out toward the enemy.
Of the 210 men in my grandfather's bombardment group, only 15 survived.
Getting on that plane every single day had to have been. He said it was 8 hours of boredom, interrupted by 10 minutes of terror. And that was when they would hit the Belgian coast and the fighters would try to knock them out of the sky before they could get to their targets.
All away, the bombardiers shout.
Gramps completed his 25 missions, came home from the war, and never set foot on an airplane again as long as he lived. He kept in touch with some of his crew members over the years, but after the war, my dad says his father never saw Ready Teddy again. I wanted to find out what happened to my grandfather's B-17, so I went to visit John Little. He's a historian at the Museum of Flight in Seattle. He pulled out a giant book with columns of airplane names and numbers.
Here we go, 42 Ready Teddy, there it is. So the serial number on his aircraft was 42-3000.
Ready Teddy was one of almost 7,000 B-17s that were built at Boeing's Plant 2 facility here on the banks of the Duwamish River in Seattle. 7,000 planes in the early 1940s. It was an incredible facility. 4 assembly lines going at once, 30,000 workers churning out up to 15 planes per day. Little reads me more about Ready Teddy.
They were based at Alconbury, England, arriving on the 25th of April, 1943.
My dad says Gramps never talked about combat. Maybe it was hard to go back to those memories because he lost so many friends. Now, the last of the survivors of World War II are slipping away, and there are only a few B-17s left. One of them is at the Museum of Flight. It was refurbished in the spring of 1998. John Little told me a story about one of the first days the public was allowed on board. A volunteer by the name of Pete Graven was sitting in the cockpit keeping an eye on things to make sure nobody broke anything, when an older man came in and sat down in the pilot seat. He closed his eyes and reached for the controls. John said Pete was going to stop him, but he realized the guy wasn't actually touching the controls. His hands were hovering right over them.
And then he noticed that the guy was flipping the switches, in the imaginary switches, in the correct order for a pre-flight. So Pete asked, you've obviously done this before. And the guy just nodded his head, didn't say anything, didn't open his eyes. Pete then asked, how many missions? And the guy said, 35. His eyes still closed. Pete then asked, any bad ones? And the guy, at this point, a tear starts to come down out of the corner of his eye. And it's still kind of hard to talk about, but he looks at Pete and says, yeah, 35, sole survivor. And it turned out that this guy had been the pilot on a B-17 who had lost his entire crew on the 35th mission. He was the only guy who survived. And he had been living with that guilt. And he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. He was 73 years old at the time. And the one thing he wanted to do was to sit in the left seat of a B-17 one last time. Sorry, but it's still hard to talk about this because he said that's where he made the greatest contribution to the human race. You know, back in 1944, 45. So, you know, it reminds you that these aircraft are more than just pieces of metal. They are, to a very large extent, monuments to people who, who have no other monuments.
My dad says he only saw my grandfather cry once. A family friend had taken photos of a restored B-17 at an air show sometime in the 70s. He came over to Gramps' house and set up the projector in the living room. And as he clicked through the slides, each photo showed the airplane as it taxied down the runway and took off into the distance. My dad says the tears rolled down my grandfather's face at the sight. Gramps loved those planes until the day he died. And when I finally saw one up close, heard it start up and taxi down the runway before taking off over the city of Seattle, I fell in love too. My father and I got to share that experience this past summer when the Experimental Aircraft Association brought a restored B-17 to Seattle. It wasn't Ready Teddy, but that didn't matter. We were so excited. My dad climbed in before anyone said we could.
Hey, Dad. Are we allowed? Are we supposed to be in here?
Oh, okay.
They climb around in these things. This is some cramped quarters.
This plane was so huge in my imagination, larger than life. But being inside one actually felt really cramped. It was small, dwarfed by the 737s we fly in today.
Check 1125.
Yes. Transfer valve switch.
The pilot and the co-pilot started to prepare for takeoff. And then that sound I'd waited so long to hear. The old plane took a while to warm up, but soon we were moving down the runway and then rising up and out over Seattle, glistening in the rain beneath us. It was too loud to talk much once we were in the air, so I just watched my father as he moved from machine gun station to machine gun station, looking out the windows of the plane, as if trying to see through his father's eyes, searching for glimpses of my grandfather in this old plane, just like I was. I did find out what happened to my grandfather's plane, Ready Teddy. It was shot down over Germany the month after he came home from the war. For Here and Now, I'm Ashley Ahern.
What a story. And her story was produced with help from Jonathan Hirsch and Jim Gates. So, have you ever tried to retrace your dad or your granddad's or your grandmom's steps through past battles? I'd love to go to Guadalcanal someday, where my dad was. Maybe you've retraced your own steps. Please tell us your story at hereandnow.org. And a thoughtful Veterans Day to you all. Here and Now.